Joining us now, Kurt Helin from NBC Sports and ProBasketballTalk.com. He's never fatigued. He's never losing games because of being tired. Kurt, how are you?
Hey, Kurt.
You said that like 10 minutes after I got out of the gym, and I'm like, man, I'm tired.
I'm not going back tomorrow.
I just tied my shoes and I'm winded, so I don't know, man. Hey, Kurt, let's talk a little bit about this Jazz team. An interesting loss. They lost to the Wizards, and of course everyone kind of hit the panic button. They rebounded a game against Oklahoma City, which they should because that team's terrible. But is there a point where you get concerned about a team maybe not playing their best basketball coming into the end of the season, or do you think the Jazz are still in pretty good shape?
They're still in really good shape. I think you guys know they have the soft schedule the rest of the way. It's the doldrums of the seasons, and there's injury and fatigue, but there's a mental side to that too, where you're just a little. It's just even as I was talking with this with another media member recently about the just relentlessness of the finals, and then it was free agency, bam, bam. Oh, hey, we're starting on Christmas, like. It has been nonstop. It's been the players had to ramp up fast. They didn't get the break. And I think that there's just some mental fatigue there. And so you're going to have some losses. By the way, Wizards still have Bradley Beal and Russell Westbrook. Like, they are fully capable of putting together really good nights. So is it a loss? You kind of look at it and get frustrated. And it's not been peak Jazz the last few weeks, but they're fine. They're going to get the one seed. And the matter is just kind of getting mentally right for the games that do matter when they land. Because even look back now, whoever they get as the eighth seed, it could be Memphis. Memphis ain't bad right now.
Mm-hmm. There's fatigue that you're dealing with, Kurt, but then there's these season-ending injuries, and Denver just suffered probably the worst one and got a win the other night after Jamal Murray, his season was finished with that ACL. Talk about Denver's ability to get to the postseason and how dangerous are they without Jamal Murray?
They're still a good team, right? They still have the guy who's probably going to win the MVP in Jokic. Aaron Gordon, you're asking Aaron Gordon to pick up on some of the scoring slack, which he certainly did in Orlando. He's just playing less of a role. I'm going to let you know a secret. I think Michael Porter Jr. is willing to take those extra shots if you got him. He's not going to back off of those. So, like, this is, and look, they still got depth. They still got Barton. Like, this is still a well-constructed team. Where they run into trouble is, let's say they're in the 4-5, and even they win that first round, and they get Utah. They not having Jamal Murray in that series. It just changes everything. With all as good as Jokic is and everybody else, that team is built somewhat around a 1-2 punch that's really difficult to stop. And now you don't have, you're fighting without one of those arms, and they're bringing in Austin Rivers. He's not Jamal Murray. No. So it's just it hurts them this year. But I think what really is going to sting them longer term is it's an ACL. 12 to 12, I'd say he's back on the court late next season, right?
Yeah.
But everybody who comes back from that, whether we're talking about football or basketball or any other sport, tennis, doesn't matter. Guys, girls will tell you it's 15 months, 18 months before they really feel normal again, right? Before they trust it and they feel the strength back and they're not they're the same. Well, that puts you deep into the playoffs, if not out. And how good are they bringing him back next season late and trying to, put the band back together? I don't know how well that's going to work. And then they've got big decisions to make because, they're going to have to pay Michael Porter Jr. and they're going to have to decide whether to pay and keep Aaron Gordon, or does he want to move on? Like, it just really sets them back as a franchise.
It's crazy how just that one injury can continue, really just wreck the path that you're on, and Denver had been looking so good. Speaking of injury, Anthony Davis, they put the timeline on him, maybe 7 to 10 days. Do you think he and LeBron kind of work together to try to come back at roughly the same time?
I think it'll be pretty close. I think the Lakers would like that because the little secret is as great as Anthony Davis is, that the offense is built around LeBron as the hub and everybody else is a spoke, including, Anthony Davis can face up and he can get buckets, and we've seen him do it in New Orleans, but he is not the number one shot creator, put the ball in his hands kind of guy. You're still, he's got to get the ball in places he can do damage. There's just a lot of places he can do that, but he's not a guy who brings the ball up and runs the pick and roll really for you. And so you're left with Dennis Schroeder doing that or whoever you're going to choose, and it's just not the same. They need them both back. So I think it's fair to say they're going to try to get them back fairly close together. I haven't looked at really 17, 18 games left, something like that. They'd probably like to get them with 8, 10, 12 games left. Let them play some together because they need to get – they're like we've been just saying, there's not going to be an easy round in the West, and the Lakers are going to fall all the way to – they're probably 6, 5, 6, somewhere in there. They're going to get Denver in the first round, or if they fall to 6, they could get Clippers or Phoenix. There's no easy first round in the NBA in the West. They can't kind of just come into this thing limping.
I want you to talk a little bit about this Dallas Mavericks team, and you can mention and talk about Luka's shot last night, but I want you to talk in whole. How much of a threat is Dallas, and where are we at with Porzingis right now?
I got hoarse this morning just trying to mimic that shot.
Right? Oh, my gosh. I watched that thing 20 times last night, and I still couldn't make sense of how he did that.
The splitting, the double team, he is – I was talking with Lloyd about this just before he came on. He is one of the best in the league right now at 22 or 21, 22, whatever he's at. Some guys can hit shots when they're not balanced. Some guys are really good shooters as long as they catch it in the pocket and got their feet under them and set, they'll knock it down. A lot of NBA players are that way. And there's a handful of players who can shoot either on the move or leaning, Jamal, I watched Lou Williams, I should say, do this forever. Leaning to his left, he'll just kill you. You let him kind of create space by going left, he'll destroy you. And then there's the guys like Luka and Dirk, and there's a handful of others out there. They just find a way to get the ball off at the right angle and get their upper body and kind of fling it, even if everything else seems just akimbo and lost. And nothing else looks right. It just seems to go in for it. It is an amazing shot. It's an amazing skill he has. But to your point, as to Dallas, nobody wants to face them in the first round, right? Nobody wants to go, hey, I'd like to see Luka in the first round. It's kind of like Portland creates the same problem. I really don't want to see Damian Lillard in the first round, even if I think we'll beat them, just because it's not going to be easy. But I don't know about that team beyond them, do you? Porzingis, there's moments, and he had one the other night. He had 31, and they looked sharp, but he's not doing that consistently. I'm not sold on his defense, and that team just feels a player away and a good player away. Like, to me, Porzingis, they are paying him to be a number two on a championship team, and I got a feeling he's a number three. Like, he brings real value. He brings a really impressive skill set when he's healthy, but I'm not sure he's the second best player on a championship team, and they may have to go find that guy.
You've talked about this, and I still think he, I'm assuming he gets your vote, but if not, no big deal. But Jordan Clarkson still gets the conversation for sixth man of the year, but the way he's been shooting it lately, Joe Ingles may have something to say about it before it's all said and done.
Yeah, this feels a lot closer than it did at the break. I mean, like midway through the season, I'm like, yeah, Clarkson's kind of running away with this, and it doesn't feel that way now. There's other guys, he slumped a little. Ingles has shot the ball really well. There's other guys like Jalen Brunson, who's having a really nice year down in Dallas. Like, there's a handful of other guys in the conversation, and it probably still goes to Clarkson. I'll be honest with you that if I had to vote today, I'd probably vote for Clarkson, but I also will be honest and say I haven't delved into it enough. I've kind of just kept adding names to my list and making notes, but I haven't really broke it down for sixth man yet. Probably still Clarkson. He fits the mold of guy off the bench who gets buckets, and that wins the award a lot, the Lou Williams, Jamal Crawford model. But it's a lot closer than it was.
Can you kind of shed some light on the LaMarcus Aldridge situation?
I'm going to miss him. Just a guy I liked. Just my personal favorite story is I'm going to forget which. It's the All-Star game in New York, whatever year that was, 15, whatever it was. They set up an interview. I'm set up an interview to interview LaMarcus. And his people and the people setting this up had to change it from where we had it planned at the last minute to somewhere because he had a signing or something at the All-Star, I forget what they call it, the convention-y thing that they do, the Fan Fest. And they're like, all right, well, we're just going to do it here. We're going to do a stand-up. And I'm like, we're going to do a stand-up with me next to LaMarcus Aldridge? Like, I'm not small. I'm 6 foot, but I look puny compared to Lord. So it's this stand-up interview where I'm like holding the mic up over my head when he answers, and we had to get him a no mic so it didn't look so weird. And then the photo of that is still my kid's favorite photo of me because, you know, I have three girls. They all think I'm dad, and I'm just kind of the largest person, one of the largest people they know. And I'm just dwarfed by LaMarcus. But a good guy. I mean, five-time All-NBA, seven-time All-Star, smooth shot, part of some really great teams. And that I didn't realize he played that long with an awareness of the irregular heartbeat. And that's something you got to be careful with. That's something you can't really mess with, right? Like that at some point, as much as you love basketball and the money and everything that comes with being an NBA star, it doesn't matter if, you know, you can't, not to go Derrick Rose here, but it doesn't matter if you can't walk your kid down the aisle, right? So I will miss him, but I fully appreciate what he's doing.
Kurt Helan joining us, NBC Sports and ProBasketballTalk.com. You know, in the college basketball ranks, we always talk about the dog days of February where, yeah, you know, it's the season's coming to an end, but it's not there yet. And so it's just kind of tough to kind of power through that last part of the year. Is it March? You know, obviously the season's delayed a little bit and it's shortened, but are we kind of dealing with that kind of time right now?
Yeah. When does that start in baseball? Like 6 weeks into the season?
Yeah. I'd say around Memorial Day. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. That is exactly where we are. It's just, you're in that spot, and we usually get it after the All-Star break for a month where teams haven't really, you get to that final 10 games and teams start to really think about playoff rotations, getting guys sharp and getting guys rested. There's some, you know, there's some ugly lineups at the end because Team X is locked in as the 3 seed. So they're going to rest everybody, you know? But you start to see that kind of focus come in. But right now they're just, and especially with the condensed season and everything else, everybody's just drained. So I think that there's like I said earlier, I think there's some mental fatigue that goes with that. And it does lead to some upsets too. It does lead to, you know, what's left of the Lakers beating Brooklyn and stuff that you just didn't expect to happen.
You know, you mentioned Dallas, and if Dallas was a 3 or 4 seed, I don't think we'd be hearing any complaints, but Luka and Mark Cuban are both yeah, complaining about the play-in game. Are there complaints warranted in terms of devaluing the regular season? And is this something that you think that Adam Silver will keep around for the foreseeable future?
Well, I'll ask the second one of that. Yes. He wants to create, what they want with this is TV partners, here's a couple games everybody's going to watch. Fans in Utah are going to watch those games because it will impact who you play in the first round, right? So suddenly there's a whole lot of fan bases, and it's what's great about March Madness and even like the NFL playoffs. It's one and done, right? College football has that too. There's real, the game has an impact. You can't say, oh, we just had an off night and coast through it. So, it's going to bring that to the TV partners. It's going to get a couple of nights of gate revenue for some teams. Beyond that, I love the complaint that Cuban made, now we've got to play we might have to play our stars down the stretch to make sure we get the seed we want. I'm like, that's part of the reason you signed up for this, man. We were just talking about all the people who get rested down the stretch, and there's some ugly games down the stretch. That's why they want this. Like, so that there's some actual more meaningful games. You get more fan bases kind of, hey, I'm fighting for the 10th seed, and the fan base may be more interested than they were. The league doesn't want everybody rooting for tanking, right? And, oh, we're winning too many games is the league hates. So it's not going anywhere. Is there value? I appreciate what they're saying. To me, if you play 72 or 82, then that's enough. Like, why are we having a play-in game? The flip side of that, though, is how many, I think, was it 2 8-seeds in the history of the NBA have advanced out of the first round? Has anybody lower than 6 ever won? I don't think anybody lower than 6 ever won the NBA championship off the top of my head. It just, maybe I'm wrong, but it's such a minuscule thing. The 7 and 8 seeds just don't advance. So I don't ultimately think it changes anything in the NBA as long as you keep these longer series. If you ever shorten it to 5 games, it gets more, you know, things get more interesting and you invite some randomness. But if you're having a 7-game first round series, one's going to beat 8 99.9% of the time.
All right, Kurt, I want you to pretend that you're talking to a couple of show hosts in New York or somewhere back east, all right? So no affiliation here in the state of Utah. And this show host says to you, you got the Utah Jazz with the best record in the NBA, but they are 0-2 against the Phoenix Suns, who have the second best record in the NBA. Who is the better team?
If I'm talking to an East Coast radio person, then I've got to be much louder, right? I just have to yell a lot. Do my Russo. What I would say is, I think Phoenix does not strike fear in people around the NBA right now, going into the playoffs, because Booker and Ayton and Bridges and the group as a unit have. Look, I love their versatility. I like some of their matchups. They haven't played in a playoffs. They haven't played in one playoff game. They haven't been there. They haven't, like, it's just a different animal. You're just Utah has been through that, and that's a huge advantage. The second part of that, they have small guards. They have the Portland problem. That's a great backcourt with Chris Paul and Devin Booker. There's 27 other teams that would take it. 25. I mean, there's not many teams that wouldn't take that backcourt. But you get to the postseason, and that's an undersized backcourt that I can exploit. They go up against, I don't know. Frankly, it's going to be a problem for Utah as well. You go up against the Clippers, they're going to start Patrick Beverley at the one. They're probably going to put Paul George, Kawhi Leonard, and Marcus Morris at the 2-3-4 in whatever order you want to put, and that's a whole lot of size to deal with. I don't think they match up well around the West. I think Utah is a much scarier team in the playoffs than Phoenix.
Well, always a pleasure catching up with you, Kurt. Thanks for your time, and I look forward to catching up with you next week.
I look forward to it, guys. Take care.
Thanks, Kurt.
Got it. Kurt Heelan, NBC Sports and ProBasketballTalk.com, right here on 97.5, 1280 The Zone.